For over 25 years, Sports Illustrated Kids has delivered sports the way kids want to read about it. And we've delivered it every month in print. Now, we're happy to be relaunching SIKids.com. The new site was designed to be mobile-first to give our audience the content it craves in an easily digestible way. Kids are some of the most passionate sports fans around. We plan to make this site the experience they deserve. Head to SIKids.com right now to check it out. Again, that's SIKids.com.
Welcome to the MMQB podcast. He is Andy Benoit, and I am not Robert Mays. And I feel like I have to start off this podcast with an apology that I'm not Robert. I know he has a lot of fans out there. Robert has moved on, no longer with the MMQB. He's going to be working for that Patriots blogger out in LA, Ben Simmons, Bobby Simmons, Bill Simmons. But obviously, we wish Robert the best. He's going to reunite with his old band, all the Grantland guys out there. Great dude. It was great working with him. And, just wish him the best. My name is Gary Gramling. I'm a senior editor at the MMQB. I'm not related to Robert Mays. We spell and pronounce our names differently. You might have seen me around the site. I write our Sunday column during the season and sporadically during the offseason. If you've seen it, it's a mess. It's a mishmash of sort of like complete nonsense, some Simpsons references, some YouTube clips I like. It's essentially, I don't know, it's like my Facebook page for the most part, but people seem to show up and read it. So I guess I can't really complain. I don't know offensive line play as well as Robert does. I certainly don't know Metallica as well. I respect Metallica, but I grew up in a Van Halen family. And then I skipped right ahead to Pearl Jam. So I kind of missed that... they were on the periphery of my musical taste, but I'm not even close. I can't match him. Really, I'm not as smart as Robert in general. He's better looking than me.
Gary, this is getting almost sad. This self introduction that you're doing here. You've got a lot of strengths that you bring to the table too.
I'll see what I can do. But Robert smells better than me. He has a very enchanting musk that I think people appreciate.
I don't know. The first time I did a podcast in person with him at the Super Bowl this past year, he had just gotten off a long flight, and we were in a very tiny room together. Yep. And I was aware of his smell, which is usually a bad, if you're aware of another man's smell, that's not the best thing. I don't know about the smell part.
It sort of brings that locker room feel to it, though, when you've been on an airplane.
Yeah,
for,
it did have a,
what,
it did have an air of authenticity to it. But you're ready to talk football. You know football, though. I mean, maybe you don't know offensive line play, which Mays and I never really talked about anyway, because people aren't interested in that.
Yep.
You know football. I've read your columns, and you've edited my stuff, and we've had discussions, and I'm real eager to do this with you.
I know some football. I'll say this. If you're missing Robert, that's fine. But if you promise, if you stick around, I promise you'll learn to at least tolerate me. And that's really all I can. That's all I can ask for. That was actually my my wedding vows with my wife. And I said I do.
Who I've met, and I think she's great. She'd be good on a podcast too.
She
was intimidatingly quick witted when I met her.
She is. She is very sharp. And at our wedding, it was like for me it was I do. For her, it was like I guess I'm here. I got the dress on. All right, why not? So with that, stick around. You're already here. You already started listening to it. Just give it a chance here. But let's jump right into the football here. We're going to start with not a favorite of yours. We're going to start with RG3. I know you have some opinions on Robert Griffin III. What do you think of him, Andy?
Well, I feel bad when he keeps coming up because it's bordering on trashing the guy now. And I don't mean to ever set out and trash a player. Never. I think he has a lot of unfixable flaws. I think he's beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with a lack of understanding of how to play from within the pocket. And by that, I mean the movement, the physical movement ability. He moves, you know, he can move as a guy, as a man, but he doesn't understand the footwork or the nuances and subtleties of moving within the pocket. And so pocket mobility is a problem. Understanding coverages is a problem. Understanding why your plays are called, what the goal of each play would be in terms of route combinations and what they work against and what coverages they might not work against. Mm-hmm. All the little things that go into being a professional quarterback, he doesn't have. And that's why he was really never even close to being in the job competition in his last year in Washington against Kirk Cousins. I don't think if it's head-to-head between him and Josh McCown, I don't think he beats out Josh McCown. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with the idea, and I'm also not a fan of hearing that Jimmy Haslam said, hey, let's go get him, you know, as if that's like the vote of confidence we need, the guy that said, let's go get Johnny Manziel 2 years ago. So I don't see this working. Quite frankly, I don't see it working at all. And there's not a more dysfunctional team you can go to as a quarterback or as any player at this point than the Cleveland Browns right now. So I see hell on the horizon for this marriage.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate. I'll play devil's advocate for a moment here. A lot of those same things could be said about Cam Newton 2-3 years ago. Cam, obviously, and I don't want to frame this as, you know, everyone turns around. Cam was a sort of unique case here, and not to mention he's a physical freak. I mean, is there any chance RG3 can sort of have a similar, you know, not to the same extent, but turn it around just a little bit, become a little more of a cerebral quarterback than he is at this point?
Well, that's a good one to bring up, Gary, because I was wrong about Cam Newton. I said before the year, I wasn't as down on him ever as I am on RG3. Hmm. I thought before the year he's about the 16th or 17th best QB in the NFL, and that he'll always remain that because he has mechanical inconsistencies as a passer, mm-hmm. and those inconsistencies also translate to some of the decisions he made when he dropped back to throw or, you know, with the ball in his hand. I mean, he's quarterbacking. Yep. And that's he was the same QB in his third and fourth season as he was in his first season. And there wasn't a lot of progress. Then all of a sudden last year happened and he turned it around and made me look like a complete fool up until the Super Bowl. So Newton's a great testament that this stuff can happen. It can go one way. You can develop guys. Now, what's different with Newton? One, he's much bigger, and the injury concerns are not there. Absolutely. Newton can run the ball and not get hurt. Yep. RG3, there's not a coach out there who, if they're counting on RG3 to be their 16-week starter, they're not going to have him run the ball 8 to 10 times a game. He can't endure it. He gets hit hard because he lands hard. He doesn't have a sense for protecting himself. That's part A. Part B, Newton was on the same team 5 years in a row now with the same head coach, mm-hmm. basically the same coordinator, not exactly Shula every year, but the same system. And he's worked with Coach Shula every year of his pro career. So there's a stability there. And RG3 obviously hasn't had that. Different coaches, different systems, now different city and different team. So I get that we're talking about two high-profile athletic QBs. I don't think there's a parallel between them beyond the little biography blip that you see on their website. They're not similar players, and Newton had a much wider skill set to begin with. Do you like RG3? I mean, like, what?
I'm playing more devil's advocate here. Though I will say this: have I ever told you my crackpot theory on backup quarterbacks?
You have, and I don't remember. I remember it was pretty good, though.
Actually, I shouldn't. It's redundant to call it a crackpot theory because all my theories are crackpot.
All right.
You know, you're not. So let's say you're the Green Bay Packers. You're a team with Super Bowl aspirations, but you don't have, you know, you have Aaron Rodgers. You don't have a great backup. Scott Tolzien isn't, you know, a guy who's going to win 4 playoff games, you'd assume. I think you're better off almost having that sort of playground backup quarterback. You know, the problem is with a guy like RG3, you don't know what he's going to do trying to operate your offense, but the defense doesn't either. It's kind of the Rex Ryan thing where, you know, he was so drawn to Tyrod Taylor because Tyrod Taylor, you know, he sees the mobility. He knows as a defensive coach the kind of fits that gives you. So I'd almost rather than, you know, rolling out a guy who's, you know, whatever, the 50th best quarterback in the NFL, and he's a guy who can operate your offense but can't do it nearly as well as a starter. In that situation where you're taking on a top team, if you have to go to your backup, I'd almost rather throw a guy out there who's just so, it's almost like he's so unexpected for you as far as what he's going to do, but he's also going to catch the defense off guard. And maybe you just, you know, you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle, but I kind of like the idea of just sort of, I don't know, just full out gamble. Just throw him out there, see what he's going to do. Because you can see RG3, and that's what intrigues people about him, is in spots, he'll move an offense and he'll make some plays with his legs. And you know, it's just something, you can't throw him out there for 16 games and expect he's going to do that for such a, you know, extended period of time.
Right. I get what you're saying, and sometimes I feel that way. I do more with younger QBs. John Madden used to say that mobility is the best friend of a young QB, because if they don't know what they're doing, they can still make something happen. They have a chance to. I think I struggle with that thought as a backup quarterback, though, because you catch the defense off guard, but you also catch your own guys off guard, because your receivers have not practiced with RG3. Yep. And the difference between RG3 and a traditional dropback quarterback is gargantuan. And pass blockers, it's the same thing. They don't know where RG3 is going to be, and it's hard to pass block for a guy where you don't know where he's going to be. So it's such a drastic – I like my backups to be the same as my starter stylistically, just a lighter version. And it's just a preference thing. I think RG3, you have to change your offense pretty remarkably to accommodate him. And I don't think there's enough practice time around the NFL to be able to do that anymore.
Well, when I get my expansion team in Hartford, I think that's the way we're going to do it. We're going to try it. We're going to bring in RG3 as our number two quarterback and see
very
how it
good.
Goes.
Remember the Patriots were going to go to Hartford
years
ago?
Yes, I have my there. I still somewhere in the depths of my closet, I have a 2001 Football Odyssey New England Patriots coming to Hartford t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up 20 minutes outside of Hartford, and after the Whalers left, there were many, many tears, and you know, we had UConn basketball, so I shouldn't say there's nothing going on there. And New Britain Rockettes baseball. I mean, there's quality AA baseball in the state. They changed their name. I can't remember what they are now. But yeah, that was a weird. I feel like it was like 3 or 4 months. And I was away at college for a lot of it, but yeah, it was a weird 3 or 4 months when the Patriots were coming to Hartford. Because I used to go up to Foxborough. I used to sling sodas up at Foxborough. I kind of. In that way, I helped build that dynasty. You know, fans were refreshed. They spent more money coming into the team. But yeah, I used to go up there for the Drew Bledsoe years. And it would have been really, really weird having a team. I mean, it's just weird having UConn football playing in West Hartford. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Whatever. I'll save some of this for my Connecticut sports podcast that I'm sure is coming up in a couple weeks here. Moving on. Sort of the other end, at least from a success standpoint, as far as the teams go, the Broncos still. Is it Sanchez? What other options do they have? Obviously, Kaepernick is the guy who keeps on popping up as sort of, I don't know. It seems like he's the last somewhat available and, depending on who you ask, capable guy. Should the Broncos go after Kaepernick at this point, or should they just go with Sanchez and rookie TBA and sort of let the chips fall where they may?
Yeah, I'd go with Sanchez. I think what you need in Denver would be, they call it a caretaker. People don't like that, but that's what we're talking about. And Kaepernick's not built to be a caretaker. He doesn't take the easy completions. He doesn't process things that way. He's very much an all or nothing type of player. And I feel the same way about some of his flaws as I do RG3's. I think he's more salvageable, Kaepernick, that is. But that doesn't mean I think he is salvageable. So if he were to stay in San Francisco, for example, which I think he will, because he's hard, you can't trade him when he's injured, and now we're at April, and so his salary's guaranteed, and no one's going to want him at that number other than the team that's stuck with him. I don't think he's going to win the quarterback job there. They might be a competition, but I would be surprised if Kaepernick doesn't get deactivated for the whole season the same way RG3 just did this past year, because they don't want to run the risk of having him get hurt and having his salary be guaranteed another year. So I think Kaepernick's totally out of the equation, which is probably why he hasn't been traded for. Teams know that he's going to be unavailable to a certain degree. And I don't see him fitting in what Denver wants to do. I think Sanchez, you move the pocket for him. It's a play-action type zone-running-based offense that we know from Gary Kubiak. I think Sanchez can survive in that sort of thing. You take enough pressure off the passer. You don't need to have him move within the pocket as much. And arm strength's not as big a deal because you're doing the rollout passes. And remember Matt Schaub and the success he had with Houston a few years ago. I think Sanchez can be similar to that for the Broncos. And if they don't like him, I think they draft someone, assuming they don't sign Fitzpatrick or Brian Hoyer or trade for Josh McCown or one of these mid-30-year-old veterans.
So in the weird alternate or parallel, I don't know if it's parallel or alternate universe that we're about to step into. And we actually got a letter about that once, the editing staff. I had called it an alternate universe, and someone wrote in to say that what I wanted to say was it was a parallel universe. And I'm
And that was so helpful by that person that took the time to do that, because here we are now and it still doesn't seem to matter and we're talking just fine around it.
Well, now I'm going to get another angry letter if that person is listening to the podcast. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I should have pulled up the email for research purposes. But in this other universe where your option is Mark Sanchez of 2016 versus Peyton Manning of 2015, who's better off in Gary Kubiak's offense?
Between Sanchez and Peyton Manning from last year?
Peyton Manning of last year.
I'd still take Peyton Manning from last year.
Okay.
Physically, Sanchez probably has more than Manning did a year ago. Manning didn't have as many responsibilities at the line of scrimmage as he normally does. He wasn't the full-out coach on the field at times, as we saw. But he still had that possibility with him. So they went to it at times, and also knowing you can go to it at times, knowing you've got a guy who can check and audible with probably the best of all time at it, that helps the coaching staff, that helps an entire offense, that builds a certain level of confidence that you can't manufacture elsewhere. Yeah. So I think Sanchez, Manning, they might be comparable physically at this stages of their lives, but you can't recreate the Manning factor in Mark Sanchez for all the intangibles that he brings.
Yeah. I'm going to throw three more names at you, and I actually like one of these guys. I don't want to say a lot because it's all relative.
I bet I know who it's going to be. I bet I can guess it, but I'll let you say the names first, and then I'll guess who you like.
I'll mix up the order. In no particular order, three guys who could be available. They're not necessarily available, but it would make sense if they are available. Nick Foles, Mike Glennon, Josh McCown. Does it make
the
sense
one you,
for...
The one you like is Mike Glennon.
That is correct. And I don't like him that much. He got Russell Wilson shipped out of Wisconsin there. He didn't, but they shipped Russell Wilson out in order to make room for Mike Glennon. So I should make that clear. I mean, I'd like to see Glennon get an extended chance as a starter, especially when obviously he doesn't have to carry that team and he doesn't have to operate an offense that's going to put up 30 points a game. But those guys would presumably be available for a somewhat reasonable price, maybe, you know, probably even cheaper than what Kaepernick would be going for. Any of those three guys make any sense to you as far as the Broncos are concerned?
I think all three of them would be a better option than Kaepernick for Denver. And I think Glennon and maybe McCown would be a better option than Sanchez for Denver.
Okay.
I'm with you on Mike Glennon. I thought he was – I liked him. You know, he got a chance to start as a rookie in 2013. Mm-hmm. He had 19 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. I mean, it's he has the tools. I thought he was an accurate enough passer. You could see he became more aware of his surroundings over the course of his rookie season, as I recall. He still has a lot to learn, especially with guys running in his face. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's learned it by now. I don't know. We haven't seen him play since 2014. But I was surprised that he kind of just disappeared quietly the way that he did, given that every year it seems like there's three or four teams in the position of teams we're talking about now, where they're shuffling through retread veteran backup type quarterbacks. Maybe they're going to start one of them. Maybe they're going to try to fix a damaged former first round pick. Whatever it is, there's a lot of unsettled quarterback scenarios around the NFL, and I'm surprised Glennon hasn't been popped up as a solution to some of these.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if the price is steeper than we would assume, because, I mean, look, he costs nothing. He was, what, a third-round pick? He's on that rookie deal. I mean, he's probably making, like, you know, right around $1 million. He costs
nothing. Yeah, 1.5.
Yeah, and if you're the Bucks, I mean, you have playoff aspirations this year. If Jameis goes down for 2 or 3 years and you don't have anyone behind him, you know, you have a very thin margin of error. So, I don't know. Maybe they're not even shopping him.
I think they are shopping him, but you're right. We don't know what the price would be. And because Winston is cheap and Glennon's cheap, the Bucks have all the options in the world for keeping him on the roster.
Yeah. Yep.
There's nothing. So if they're not worried about salary and you've got plenty of money available at the position to begin with because of Winston's rookie deal, then the only reason you would part with Glennon is if someone blew the doors off you with a trade offer. Which means what you're describing, the price probably is a little bit steeper than it normally would be.
Yeah, yeah. I want to move on to one more quarterback situation here. This is New York bias coming through. Everyone here is still, wringing their hands over Fitzpatrick. When's he going to sign? It looks like he's not going anywhere else, and it looks like they're not really entertaining the thought of bringing anyone new in. They brought in RG3 to kind of be like, look at this, Fitz. Look at this. We got another guy. And obviously that seemed like it was not going to happen in any way, shape, or form. Is Geno Smith, is he an option at all from what you saw? He played spots in that, he played in relief in the Oakland game last year. Didn't look horrible. You've seen what he could do earlier in his career. Chan Gailey, obviously, he's worked some magic with the smoke and mirrors, especially when it comes to Fitz. But, I mean, can they hold that over Fitzpatrick at all? Say, hey, we're just going to play Geno if you don't want to sign the $7 million deal.
I don't know. I feel the same way about Smith as I do about as they do about Mike Glennon to a certain degree. I thought Smith showed a lot of positives as a rookie. Now, he had way too many turnovers, mm-hmm. but that happens. That's bound to happen, and sometimes that can be a positive indication of something with a drop-back quarterback because that shows a willingness to try to fit the ball into tight areas. Now, as Ryan Fitzpatrick, in fact, himself has shown over the course of his career, if you have a willingness but you don't have the capability, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so those interceptions are bad. But I think Smith does have the capability. He's not a cannon-armed guy, but he can throw the football. And he was always willing to make throws with bodies around him in the pocket, which is another crucial trait.
Yep.
And one that, by the way, RG3 never had. That was that's the biggest difference with him and quality quarterbacking. So I think lastly, what they asked Geno Smith to do as a rookie, they put a lot on his plate, a lot of full field, downfield, multi-progression reads. And considering what they asked him to do, I thought there was a lot to like and a lot of upside. Now, I'm not the one in the building with him every day, though. And those same people who are in the building with him every day, they're the ones that decide to bring in someone else and look at other quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They never fully attach to Geno. And I think there's a reason for that. And off-field stuff is probably too strong a phrase for him. But there are certainly locker room things you hear about with him at times.
Yeah.
So I say all of my stuff, my piece here, with a grain of salt. Just as an outside observer, he has the tools. But there's probably a reason he hasn't gotten on the field very much in the last year or so.
Yeah, it's it would be and not that this is the end all be all, but he's such a tough sell to the fan base around here. I mean, there's such a heavy negativity attached to his name because of what he did the first couple seasons of his career. It's tough. It's funny, we had a I probably shouldn't disclose this, but one of the reporters on our staff sort of corrected me when I had mentioned this in a meeting, where I sort of said, you know, the Jets, they have this win now roster. I mean, you know, how could they not bring back Fitz? And I was corrected. And, you know, it's not a win now roster. The guys they brought in, they mostly signed these guys because they had no rookies coming up who were ready for big extensions. So the guys, the Brandon Marshall move, you know, some of this stuff, it was more a matter of, well, we got to sign someone. We got to fill out this roster. We have some money to spend. Bring in some short-term veterans. You know, they might not necessarily feel like this group is ready. Certainly they're good enough to make the playoffs, but, you know, are they ready to sort of make that next push and be a legitimate Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, who said that? Can you tell us who said that?
I don't want to say who said that.
Okay. I'm going to assume it's Peter and that it's just the guy in charge and that's why we're talking about it. I get the sentiment. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I think if you sign Darrelle Revis and you have the scheme that they have in New York with Todd Bowles and what he does with pressure concepts and blitzes up the middle of the field, and therefore by doing that, what you need out of your cornerbacks, which is reliable matchup man-to-man type coverage, I think the Revis signing indicates to me that there was an element of wanting to win now, because that's a hefty investment to make in one of the most important and expensive positions in all of football.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I quite concur with the idea that they didn't want to win now, because they had an explosion of free agent signing. Marcus Gilchrist was another big one. Buster Skrine. They went out and got the exact type of guys for Todd Bowles' system, and they did it by free agency. They didn't do it via the draft.
No, look, they're in an interesting spot. And look, I have a soft spot for the Buffalo Bills. I went to school in Syracuse. I remember the Fitzpatrick years. I just got the feeling watching that team last year, like this group, at least this offensive group, this is their maximum. This is the best they can do. And, you know, it all sort of slowly crumbled with Fitz in Buffalo. And, you know, that was the time he got his big contract, the kind of big contract he wants now. Just the money wasn't the same back then. Just like, I'm sure the way the cap is growing, someone will look back in 5 years and Brock Osweiler will be upset that he didn't get X amount of dollars when whoever, I don't know, who's going to be the hot number two quarterback in 5 years, probably RG3 or something when I get my Hartford team.
No, I get what you're saying. Fitzpatrick fits what they want to do. Is so here's almost the discussion is almost academic to a certain point, because once the season starts, once we get to summer, you play with the guys you have and you try to win each and every week. And if you get in the postseason, you're a Super Bowl contender, because that's how it works. I mean, you've got a shot at that point. The Jets are on the cusp of being a postseason type team. They had the talent to go 10-6 last year. Quarterbacks aren't falling out of the sky into their laps. So what's our best option in order to compete this year, which is always the best way to build a team still, is to win and instill a culture of winning as soon as possible. And without a doubt, Ryan Fitzpatrick's that best option. He's comfortable in Gailey's scheme and system. He's now played with the guys around him for a year. It's not even remotely close. And then Matt Forte addition probably makes a little bit of a difference, too. It's going to be a more diverse offense than last year. Yeah. So it's reason to believe the Jets will be a better version of themselves next season. And that's what's surprising to me about why – I don't know what Fitzpatrick's asking for. I would love to know what his number is, because I can't understand how he's not re-signed by this team, or really any team, but especially this team, unless he's asking for 180% of his value or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I hope they keep it together.
Let me ask you this. Do you think – I think he since has shaved, but do you think – let's say he's – I can't remember if he has or not, but let's say he still has a long beard. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's inappropriate to be a quarterback and look like a He-Man like that, or like a Grizzly Man?
I think these days it's all right. And I think especially being so close to Brooklyn where everyone has that facial hair, I think he can get away with it here. Not in every market.
Okay.
But, I think he can sell it okay. Here in the Brooklyn hipster market that we have here in New York.
Okay.
I think he's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know,
it just kind of always rubbed me weird. And I just thought, you know, it doesn't look like a quarterback, which I know that's all, it's a stereotype. How dare me?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It almost like you, whenever you see a guy with that kind of beard, at least a small percentage of you has to ask in the back of your mind, is he taking this situation seriously right now? Or what's a joke to him and what's not? How often is he being ironic when he walks into a room? And that's not a question I like to go through with my quarterbacks. Now, I'm going to get a lot of hate tweets for this because people don't, you know, it's cool to be all tolerable and all that. And it's, I don't think we can, I think we're allowed to discriminate against facial hair though. I have a little beard myself, in fact.
No, I get, look, he went to a pretty good school. I don't remember specifically which one. I don't know if anyone's ever brought that up. Might be right.
Okay, I sense a little bit of you're not going to give him the full do there.
But no,
Harvard man doesn't get it. People assume because he went to Harvard, they think that he's this cerebral, smart quarterback that's going to lead you down the field. He doesn't play that way. You know, he doesn't. He's not a cerebral type. It's like Alex Smith, you know, who is also very smart coming out. I don't think book smarts translates very well to quarterback. I don't think there's a huge correlation the way we might assume there would be.
Yeah. Well, I hope they keep it together. It's watching Gailey and Fitz work together. It's they're just a harmony in there that, you know, the world needs that right now.
There you go. Very good.
The other news this week, and I feel bad ripping on this guy, and I'm going to rip on him, but everyone sort of snickered when this news came out. You know, the Texans were basically came out and said, Brian Hoyer is available. Send in your offers now. We're taking bids for Brian Hoyer. I don't know. I mean, does he have a place as a number two somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. He'd be the best number two in the league. Brian Hoyer is better than three or four of the starters in the NFL right now.
Oh, I guess, is that playoff game just, did it just melt my mind too much for me to sort of accept him going forward?
Maybe. I don't know. I get caught up sometimes looking at big pictures with guys because when you watch every game, you kind of try to you generalize more than you need to at times. Maybe that playoff game has damaged his reputation. Maybe I need to consider that more because that was a very poor showing.
Yeah.
I know some of his other showings, though, that looked poor, like that week one game against Houston as well to open the season, were not on him. There were a lot of other issues with that offense last season.
Okay.
A bad running game. Receivers were young and unreliable at times. Even though DeAndre Hopkins was highly productive, there are a lot of areas that I'm sure the Texans feel he needs to improve as a details-oriented NFL wide receiver. I thought Hoyer kept a lot of things together, all things considered, in Houston. Maybe he's not a starter, but Dallas, for example, if they don't draft a QB, they'd be wise to sign Brian Hoyer.
Interesting.
Or trade for him or whatever.
I like
that. You
don't
see him that way?
No, he's a good dude, and I feel bad having these negative thoughts about him. But boy, that was, I don't know, it was like a plane collides with a helicopter and falls into a train.
Sure.
It was difficult to watch. And you just got the feeling that, you know, they could play, they could play 26 quarters today and the Texans will not put points on the board against that Chiefs defense.
No, I hear what you're saying. I got you.
But you're right. I shouldn't weigh that one game so heavily.
Well, I think you might be weighing it a little too heavily, and I think I'm probably not weighing it heavily enough. Mm. I think it is being weighed around the NFL because otherwise Hoyer's name would have been out there more. There would have been more interest generated. He's kind of the forgotten man in this offseason. We've talked a lot about – seems like every week we're talking about these middle-tier or big name but damaged quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And Brian Hoyer hasn't been involved in those discussions very much. Remember a few years ago when he got hurt in Cleveland, there was a thinking of like, hey, he's the hidden gem we've stumbled upon.
Yeah. No, it's – all right. I'll
But no, I'll put it like this. Let me just put it like this, Gary, and then we can move along. But I think if you can plug in Brian Hoyer and have reason to believe that your full playbook can still be executed at a respectable level. And to me, that's exactly what you need in a backup quarterback or a placeholder quarterback.
I like that. No, I think that's good news. I'm happy to hear this. I'm surprised, but I'm happy to hear that. I thought we might have seen the last of Brian Hoyer in that very sad playoff performance, but that's good news. We'll move on. We'll move on here because that was a very lengthy and interesting Brian Hoyer conversation, if I do say so myself. A guy you have a piece coming up on next week, if not next week, the week after. We'll do it soon. We don't know what the schedule is going to be as far as our site goes right now. You spent some time with Jared Goff. Obviously, option for Cleveland, option for, well, everyone right now. He's in the draft, and everyone's going to draft players. Give me your overall impressions of Goff's game and sort of what you thought of him as a dude as you, you know, sort of hung out with him, watched some film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was great to be around. We hit it off real well. Yeah, that's a grain of salt there because that's still a manufactured environment. You know, yeah. He knows that we're on the record and we're watching football. We're not out mingling with his social circles or anything like that. Personally, yeah. I know I liked him, though. And I thought he talked about the game very well, was very open. I think we have similar things we see in quarterbacking what's important to us. I like his game a lot. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm quite in love with it, but I really, really like it a lot. And I think there's reason to believe, I don't know if I'd say he's Andrew Luck 2.0. He's a different style of player. Mm-hmm. You know, take styles aside. I'm talking about what level of young quarterback we're talking about. I don't know if we're looking at that very first tier of guys, but I think there's every reason to believe he would be a Phillip Rivers type, top of the second tier, bottom of the first tier type QB sometime in the next 3 to 4 years. And then who knows from there what could happen. But he has all the traits. And it starts with that pocket understanding that we talked about that some of those other guys lack. He has that in spades. And he can, as they say, make all the throws. He's got the arm talent.
Nice, nice. I mean, a lot of people linking him to Cleveland right now. Robert Mays, actually, his final piece for the MMQB was sort of drawing that this weird link between Tim Couch and Jared Goff. Tim Couch in a good way. A lot of people, I know Bruce Arians has tremendous respect for Tim Couch and really gets bummed out when people call him a bust. Sort of the as I think Robert put it, the unfairly maligned Tim Couch. But you know, Cleveland, it's a logical landing place, number two pick. Is he plug and play there? Does he make sense for Hugh Jackson? What do you think, Andy?
Well, from what I hear, Carson Wentz is ahead of Goff in most mock drafts. Is that what yep. you is that fair?
It's a guess. I mean, I don't think
Last
anyone
thing,
knows
I
right
don't
now.
Check
no,
in
no
on
one's
this stuff very
hands.
Much. I think a lot of it's just, you know, a waste of time. But
were I a betting man, which I'm not, yeah, you'd probably wager Wentz. Let's call Wentz 64%, but let's say Cleveland goes with Goff. Does that make sense?
I think anyone taking Goff makes sense. I think mm-hmm. he works in every scheme. He ran a spread type system at Cal, but he's not a spread type quarterback. So he's a bona fide pocket passer who can also play spread. I think he runs pretty well. Not a mobile QB, but I think he can be what Ryan Tannehill is, or maybe to a let's take one degree back and say what Andy Dalton is for okay. Cincinnati in terms of movement skills. You can probably run a read option look with him once or twice a game just to add the numbers in your favor for the rest of your running plays. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a system for him no matter where he goes, which makes him plug and play to a certain degree. Now it's a matter, do you want to put the rookie out there? An interesting thing with Goff, he got thrown out there as a freshman at Cal and took a lot of lumps.
Yeah.
And went through that. And remember when Jay Cutler came out, that was like one of the testaments to him was he played on a bad team at Vanderbilt and he yep. handled it very well, great toughness. Goff, that's a, you know, it's not a feather in the cap to be beat around your first year or two as a starter in college, but it helps. I think it helps, and I bet he would learn from mistakes much quicker than a typical plug-and-play rookie quarterback would because he's already been one of those before at the college level.
Yeah. You know, whenever I think of guys like that, I always come back to J.P. Lossman when he was at Tulane. Mm-hmm. The big thing was like, mm-hmm. oh, Tulane, they suck. J.B. Losman's going to be so good when he gets to the NFL because he's going to have, like, guys who can block, who can catch. And then, obviously, I don't know if it just – my fear is always probably because of J.B. Losman. I can't sleep at night because of J.B. Losman for the most part. When you stick...
I saw the first game I went to, the very first game I went to, a Sunday game. So it was actually my second game.
Yeah.
But it was a daytime game. It was when Favre was with the Jets. I was in my early 20s covering the game, and J.P. Losman threw like the game losing interception or whatever. And he walked by me on his way to the locker room. Yeah. And it was the most angry face I've ever seen on the way to a locker room any level. And that's what I remember about J.P. Losman. He just had a great angry post-game face.
That's a, you know, I'm glad he can hang his hat on something at this point. He was, yeah, I thought he was going to be a fine NFL quarterback, and it just didn't work out. He's in that that Bills QB graveyard, or metaphorical graveyard, not literal. But, you know, it scares me when you take the young guys. The Browns, obviously, they lost a ton of talent. Alex Mack is gone. Mitchell Schwartz is gone. I don't know. I don't know who they're going to run out there on the offensive line. I don't have the depth chart in front of me, and apparently I'm just too lazy to type it into my laptop right now. But let's just say
if the season started today, it would be Austin Patzer, who is a former Jaguar and a favorite of many NFL defensive ends.
Yes. Yep. I mean, do you even run if you're the Browns, whether you take Wentz or you take Goff, do you even run a young quarterback out there and run that risk of sort of, I don't know, Blaine Gabberting the guy and just getting him pounded play after play?
It depends on who the quarterback is. And that's an interesting guy you bring up in Gabbert, because we could have a discussion about what happened with Blaine Gabbert. We can see his problems, and the discussion becomes, what caused them, or could they have been prevented? The problems with Gabbert, and he's an illustration of general quarterbacking when you get to these high-level guys. Gabbert had a great arm, still has a great arm. At his best, he's as good a passer as almost anyone in the NFL. You see that, but when he has bodies around him and when he senses pass rushing pressure, if he starts looking at the pass rush, he can't function.
It got
inside his head after a while, and he started not just taking sacks. I used to talk about this with a buddy of mine, how to avoid self-destructive behavior. I said, don't be Blaine Gabbert in the pocket, because what Blaine Gabbert would do is he would fear the sack coming so much that he changed his footwork and stepped into sacks.
Yeah.
He would create the very thing he feared by fearing it so much, and it was self-destructive quarterbacking.
So
now, is that caused because that's how he is? He didn't play very much at Missouri. He played in a spread scheme, so he didn't play very much under pressure at Missouri. So is that the problem there? Or was that kind of ingrained into him where he touched a hot stove early in his NFL career and was never the same? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't think if there's ever a cut and dried answer to that question, we're going to see a lot fewer quarterback busts, because you do run the risk of having guys become that. So let's say Goff steps in and gets sacked 57 times in his rookie season and gets hurt for three of the games or something like that, and isn't the same guy in 2 years. You know, is that because Jared Goff can't play, or is it because he shouldn't have been out there in the first place? Yeah. I know this. Goff was good in college. He was very good at not worrying about the pass rush and avoiding the rush. So I think he has if anyone could survive that first year, it would be him, because he's got the necessary skills to offset some of the issues that most rookies bump into. He doesn't need great pass protection necessarily.
Okay. Interesting.
Is that a lot? I feel like I talked for like 10 minutes there and then kind of circled back to where I began almost.
Yeah, which is what this show is all about. I actually really like that that hot stove, touch the hot stove early in his career. I appreciate that. That was poetic. Is that one of yours, or is that something you've heard?
It just came out of me as I went along. It really did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was really nice. That was really nice.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, actually, we'll move on. A couple stories on the other side of the ball. We'll move off from the quarterbacks. I think people hear about quarterbacks a lot. So let's talk about some defensive guys. Justin Houston going to miss, if not all, most of next season with the ACL injury. What does that do to the Chiefs defensively, besides obviously hurts them? Can they make up for it? Is this still a playoff favorite? What's going to happen?
I think they can compete without Houston. He's their best defensive front seven player for sure. So the loss does hurt. He's a good run defender. He sets the edge. We know what he can do as a pass rusher. He's extremely good against zone concepts where the ball is flowing away from him. Mm-hmm. Good as a backside container or as a pursuit and chase player. You do lose a lot when you take him out of the lineup. Now, he was out last year, though, and they kept winning games when he was out.
Yep.
And Dee Ford on film stood out positively a lot of the time. Now, okay. He has negatives still. He disappears for stretches where he shouldn't. But at his best, and he was at his best a lot more often last season, he's extremely explosive. He's versatile. He was actually pretty good in coverage in certain matchup man concepts when he had to take the running back out of the backfield. There's a lot to like about Dee Ford, and so this is a great opportunity for him. They brought Tom Bahaly back because he's a guy that you keep thinking he's going to wash up any minute now, and he seems to just stay, almost get better, if anything else. So they've got Hawley on one end, Dee Ford on the other. That's still a top 10 bookend pass rushing duo in the NFL.
All right. It's funny, you know, when the Chiefs drafted Dee Ford a couple years ago, it was – And listen, I'm as big a draft dork as anyone out there, and everyone said, oh, you need receivers. You already got Houston and Ali. What are you doing? This is why you do it, and especially with the premium on the edge guys. And I remember the same year the Eagles took Marcus Smith, which obviously has not worked out to this point. I'm sure there's a whole other story with that, but. You know, everyone got on the Chiefs for taking Dee Ford, and look at where we are now.
There's a reason it went that way because coaches have their beliefs in certain things, and I've been told that Andy Reid, his motto when he shows up at a place, he says, "Find me a good serviceable quarterback, get me a left tackle, and get me two pass rushers and a cornerback, and I'll figure the rest out."
Yep.
So Andy Reid's almost always going to take a pass rusher ahead of a wide receiver because he believes if he has the serviceable quarterback and the left tackle that can, and not just, when you say left tackle, we mean decent pass protection, but a guy who can anchor. When you have a reliable offensive line, in other words, then he thinks he can manufacture offense. The play designs can win. You don't need superstar receivers to get open because we're going to outsmart you with our play designs. And by the way, he has for most of his career. He likes pass rushers because that tells you he's probably not huge into blitzing and he wants to be able to just generate pressure on its own. So Kansas City, it doesn't surprise me that they would take Dee Ford. They probably also, I think they thought Tom Bahaly was not going to be with them much longer and he's been better than expected. So there's your Dee Ford 101 or 201 or whatever level we're at with Dee Ford right here.
No, I like that. He's going to be one of the key guys this year. Where do you think the Chiefs fall in the AFC West at this point? I mean, obviously, it's very early. We still have draft. Things have to sort themselves out here. But, is this a contender still? Do they sort of slide back into a 8-8, 9-7 range?
Well, Gary, where do you think they fall? Because to me, the AFC West is, I think, Oakland's probably the most talented team or certainly the most improved team, certainly the fastest rising team. Denver's probably the most talented, absolutely the best defense in the conference or in the division, and the defending champs, of course. Kansas City was outstanding last season, and there's no way San Diego was as bad as their record indicated last year.
Yeah.
So I could almost see any of these four teams shuffling in whatever order you can dream up at this point. Where do you see it?
I think you're right. I think the Chiefs are a lock for 9 and could go as high as 11, maybe 12.
You think they're a lock for 9 wins?
I think they're a lock for 9. This is, and we can get into this another week because I don't want to go back to too much quarterback talk today, but Derek Carr still makes me a little bit nervous. I'm very excited about him. And again, it's another thing where I'm putting way too much weight on one game, but watching the San Diego game late in the year where it was kind of like, oh, Oakland's gonna do whatever they want offensively. And, you know, guys were banged up, but, you know, it was another game where it was kind of like, man, they're kind of getting shut down here by a pretty mediocre Chargers defense. Derek Carr makes me a little bit nervous, excited at the same time, but nervous. The Chargers are going to be better. Are they going to figure the Chiefs are going to split with them? They're going to split with Oakland. I don't know. Maybe they go 3-3 within the division. I guess I'd have to take a closer look at the schedule. I think the Chiefs are a hair behind the Broncos. If I had to handicap it now. And you know, Oakland, it's just gonna be the volatility of Derek Carr. You know, does he take the next step? Then they're probably right there with the Chiefs. I'm not sure he does. I still think they're behind the Chiefs, and I still think San Diego is, despite Phillip Rivers, you know, they're better, but they're still fourth in the pecking order.
Yeah, I gotcha. That's, I wonder, that's just I bet me. Rivers is the best QB to ever finish with the third worst record in the NFL.
It's unbelievable.
Have we ever seen a genuine star quarterback's team lose as many games as they won where the quarterback stayed healthy and playing? Now, the guys around him weren't healthy, but Rivers was fine last year. He played like he usually plays. Other factors went wrong, and they lost a ton of games. You just don't see that. Usually, if you've got the quarterback, you're good for at least five or six wins right there.
Yep. Yeah, it was incredible watching what was going on around Rivers last year where they just – I mean, they ran out of bodies. I was sitting by my phone waiting for a call from Tom Telesco to go suit up at a receiver. Never came, but it was getting close. It was getting real close. one other guy, and I'll preface this guy with a statement. Again, I'm a huge draft dork. I watch a lot of college basketball. I do watch a lot of college basketball, but I watch a lot of college football. Nick Fairley, you know, coming out of Auburn a couple years ago. I mean, Nick Fairley was... Yeah, he was Reggie White, but better.
Really? Wait a minute.
No,
really?
he wasn't.
I mean, he was drafted number 10 that year.
Exactly. Like, coming off the national title game, that was the national title game against Oregon where everyone thought it was going to be, you know, 112 to 108 for a final score, and instead it was something like 21-18 or something like that. And Fairley just wrecked Oregon the entire game, and obviously he for whatever reason, slipped to 11 that year. 11 or 10, I might have this wrong. I kind of remember Texans fans being upset that they took Watt instead of Fairley. I might have the history wrong. But, you know, Nick Fairley...
You're right. He was number 13. You're right on with that.
That was the, you know, Texans fans booing the J.J. Watt pick, which is why, obviously, being a draft dork has its...
Attend the draft and then the camera shows and they're booing or they're clapping and nodding approvingly as if they have any clue whatsoever of what they're reacting to right now. These teams do such extensive backgrounds on every one of these players. So as a fan, however much you think you know about the guys and how much you think you know your team needs what they want or what they need, divide that by 10,000, take away 50, and that's about what the actual percent of knowledge is.
Yeah.
The teams have so much more understanding than people like us on the outside making these decisions.
I went through a period where I 100% agree with you. I went through a period where I just kind of said, this is sad. This is sad that I think these things and I'm reacting to these things. But, you know, I just embraced it after a while. And whatever, I'm guessing, and I don't know. I don't know better than anyone else out there. I certainly don't know as well as the teams. But, you know, it's just fun. It's fun to react to something. It's fun to think you know and just sort of, I don't know, let your imagination run that Nick Fairley is better than Reggie White. Might still happen. He's still young.
And better than J.J. Watt, apparently, too, to some people. I'll say this. He was projected, but kind of like Daquan Bowers, who fell much further for different reasons than Fairley. But he was, for a while, projected as the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And then he fell when teams started learning more about him. I think if we're talking about Nick Fairley now, the guy that the Saints just signed, the 28-year-old
who was in St. Louis last year,
they got a good player.
Yeah.
They got a good improve, and they need a ton of help. They have the worst defensive line in the NFL in terms of just raw talent. I think they had 8 rookies last year that played along the D-line, and none of them were taken higher than the 5th round of the draft, if I'm not mistaken. So they needed the help. Fairly, one of them was their second rounder, Kikaha, but Fairly gives them the help they need with the inside presence. He was very good at 2-gapping and 1-gapping last year, mostly 1-gapped in St. Louis as a penetrator. I think the Saints got a bargain here, and I was surprised that for the second year in a row, Fairley had to take a 1-year prove it type of contract from somebody.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me too. I mean, the guy's 28, so obviously you know, if he indeed proves it this year, there's that room to give him a long, I don't want to say long term, but certainly a longer term, more significant deal. But I had forgotten about him. And then it just sort of popped up this week, and it was like, oh, Nick Fairley was still sitting out there and only took a 1-year deal? I don't know. Again, I try not to let the draft dork within me sort of run away with these things, but yeah.
Who else is out there then that's any good for free agents? Who's still left?
I mean, who do you think? Reggie Nelson is a guy. I watched a ton of Bengals last year. You know, he's... To me, he was just sort of he's a rock. You know, he's 32 now, but he's a rock in the defensive backfield there. And, you know, these safeties are going to last longer than physically than a lot of other positions. I'm surprised he hasn't landed somewhere.
I am too. I'm surprised as well. And wherever he signs, he's going to win a starting job. He's not an NFL backup safety. He's a top 20 NFL safety. And he can play center field or the box or come off the edge. He's one of the best edge blitzing safeties in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Reggie Nelson's going to be, wherever he goes, he's going to be a great bargain for someone, and he's going to make a defense instantly better.
You know, Walter Thurman is another guy. He's contemplating retirement, which is obviously complicating any sort of contract negotiations he has going on. He's a younger guy. He's what, 28? I mean... It would seem to me he's obviously capable of helping someone. I don't know. What do you think of him?
I liked Walter Thurman last year. Something that's extremely valuable these days are safeties who can cover like a corner can.
Yeah.
Because so many teams are flexing their tight ends.
Yep.
And they're playing up tempo. And so they might go into a run formation with the tight end on one play, and then they split out and they're in an empty set with the tight end out wide the next play. The more former corners you have in your secondary, and in Philadelphia had a lot last year with Thurman and Jenkins, who was a corner for the Saints in his early NFL career, the more you have of that, the more options you have, the better off you can be. Thurman has good ball awareness and good understanding of zone concepts and route recognition for the most part. And so he can also, because of that, he can play the basics of the safety position. I like Walter Thurman. The reason he's not on a team is because he's contemplating not playing. I've heard he turned down, according to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, he's turned down about $4 million a year, which is a good solid number for a safety. I think the highest paid safety makes about $7 million. George Iloka, who to me was the best safety on the market this year, re-signed with Cincinnati at $6 million a year. Walter Thurman, if he's turning down $4 million a year, that tells you he might not want to play because he's not going to get more money than $4 million a year.
Yeah. Interesting. One other guy I want to touch on real quick. I would not sign Arian Foster just because of the, I mean, obviously coming off a ruptured Achilles, what are you going to get out of him this year? Who knows? You know, obviously he's reaching that age, 29, seems like he's about to go off a cliff. Did you see before the injury last year, did you see anything from Arian Foster that told you he was still a top of the line, top shelf runner?
You would see flashes of that, mm-hmm. and I thought what made him so at his best, he was great at his best, what made him so great was what he did in the passing game. He brought fluidity as a receiver. Now, I'm talking about 2 years ago, though. I'm not talking about last season where he didn't play. And there's a big difference when you're 29, you played four games last year, but he wasn't a meaningful contributor.
Yeah.
There's a big difference when you're 29 and not playing, coming off a year you didn't play, versus when you're in your early 20s. So I think that's part A. Part B, Gary, is there are guys in the NFL, meaningful, powerful decision makers, who feel that signing a former star who's in the final 10% of his career or so is the worst thing you can do. Because those stars aren't their usual selves, and they're the last ones to understand that. So all you sign up for is a basket case, a guy who thinks he's more than he is, and you try to integrate him into your system, and he's been in a different system his whole life, and now you've got a problem on your hand. And I don't know Arian Foster personally, but I know all the stuff we've seen about him publicly. He's not a normal guy. He's not a go-with-the-flow. He's not a foot soldier. He's very much his own independent thinker. And my guess is there are – more than a majority of teams in the NFL that the coaches think. I don't want to deal with that kind of stuff. I don't want to be the one that has to explain to Arian Foster that he's not who he used to be anymore. And I don't want him talking to my rookies and planting seeds of malcontent or whatever happens with these unconventional thinkers that get into a locker room. That's how coaches would see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else still out there unsigned who you want to touch on?
Can you? I don't like him. Nobody likes him. But can you believe Greg Hardy has not only not been signed, but hasn't even surfaced and anywhere in the discussion? I haven't heard of any teams even. I'm sure there have been some. I haven't heard of it of teams exploring the guy or having any interest at all in him.
I'll say this. If anyone is exploring him, I mean, they've got to be doing everything in their power to not let anyone know that they're exploring him. It's one thing to sign him, but, you know, if you were to have him in your building and then that got out there and you didn't sign him, it would be the worst of both worlds. You'd get ripped and you wouldn't get the player. I mean,
do you think he'll be on a team this year?
Oh, I got to think he will. I got to think someone's going to be desperate enough to bring in an edge rusher or... Yeah, I think he will. I mean, he can obviously still play. I mean, you'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, he wasn't great last year in Dallas. He certainly was not worth the trouble he brought to the table. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he has the talent. I think the reason he's not signed, as bad as it is to have the kind of off-field character issues that he has, and they're bad. They're indefensible. Oh, yeah. When you bring character issues into the locker room, to NFL teams, oftentimes that's worse because it directly impacts football more than the other stuff. And you've got a guy that has both of these because he was late to meetings in Dallas last season. He was disruptive through the media. Mm-hmm. He did everything possibly he could have done. He did it wrong last year in Dallas. And so my guess is that's why he's not signed, is because teams can't trot him out and say, well, you know, he's a reformed man and we like what he brings to the locker room, because Dallas already tried that and they humiliated themselves doing so.
Similarly, different problems, but certainly a litany of off the field problems. Alden Smith still out there. What did you see from him last year? Obviously, he was cut short by injuries, and I was actually surprised he was on the field early last year. I thought he was going to be a guy who was going to have to take some time away from football. I don't know. What did you see from him in Oakland?
Well, I think people who have worked with Alden Smith feel differently about him than people who worked with Greg Hardy feel about Hardy.
Yeah.
Smith has his demons, and he's certainly dealt with them in an awful way and an unproductive way. But the people who know him that I know, they root for him. They want the best for him. They think the heart's in the right place. The brain's just not near the heart at this point. Mm. So Alden Smith, to me, is more salvageable and more palatable to sign if you want to bring him in. And I've heard Oakland maybe would be interested in having him back. You know, they signed Bruce Irvin, so my guess is they're not as interested as you'd think. Mm-hmm. But when they signed him last year, here's the kind of guy Alden Smith, the kind of player he is. They instantly changed their defense to become just a straight-up attacking 3-4 defense. Yeah. They weren't a 4-3 defense anymore. They became a 3-4 to have Alden Smith at outside backer. That was strictly because of Alden Smith. So he's good enough to change the entire makeup of a defense by being in the lineup.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to move in.
Would you sign him? Would you sign Alden Smith? Let's say someone tells you, we're not going to speculate, but let's say someone tells you he has an addiction problem that he's going to have to battle throughout his life, which I think is kind of what we've heard said, whispered around, beaten around the bush.
Yeah.
If you knew that and you knew how he's handled things before, would you sign him, knowing what also he brings to the table?
My Hartford expansion team, we'd sign him. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about, the way the NFL and their organizations handle guys like this. I don't think proper support is in place for a lot of them. But yeah, I'd be nervous if I were Team X about to bring him in. I'd certainly sign him before I signed Greg Hardy. I'd say that.
Oh, yeah, no question. I would, too. And honestly, I think he's a more talented player than Greg Hardy as well.
Yeah,
I think Hardy's as good as almost anyone, especially because he can play D-tackle. But Alden Smith has long arms and violent hands to go with a quick first step. Yeah. I think Alden Smith, someone will take him because he can be a difference maker for him. Once he's got to serve a suspension first, too, though. Keep that in mind.
Yes. Yep. One more segment. I'm going to make you do something that you hate, but I'm going to make you do it anyway because I'm the worst kind of dork. I'm a draft dork, and I'm a fantasy football dork. My father got me into it.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
when you say fantasy dork,
yeah,
are you someone who goes around bragging like, hey, guess who I got on my fantasy team, and then explaining who you have on your? Are you one of those?
I'll say this. I the draft dork thing. I'll let people know it. I'll wear it proudly. Fantasy dork thing. I do my best to sort of keep it within. I don't talk about it except within my fantasy dork circles, of which there are quite a few.
Is there anybody else from MMQB who runs in your fantasy dork circle?
No, there's not. We actually talked about doing a league. Gagne doesn't play. Mravic plays. Peter plays, but he barely pays attention.
He doesn't take it seriously.
Yeah.
I filled out his lineup for him 1 week and the taxi ride over from our meeting back to the restaurant for the holiday party.
Well, I remember before I really knew Matt Gagne well, one of our other editors, we were doing it was like 2010 or 2011, we were doing the mock draft for the SI fantasy football issue. And Gagne took Mario Manningham in like early second round, which was, I mean, Mario Manningham was like a 40 catch a year deep threat guy,
yep.
You know, whatever, 6 touchdowns. It made no sense. And everyone was like, are you sure, Matt? And he popped into my office after the draft and was just like, I don't know how to play. I have no idea what was going on. And I was like, well, yeah, I could sort of tell from your team.
Well, how do you not know how to play if you're drafting a team?
Yeah.
What do you think's let me ask you this. I don't mean like how do you not know if you're drafted. You can sign up and not know how to play, but as the draft is unfolding and you're looking around seeing what's happening, if you don't know how to play, then what do you think is happening? Like what are you mistaken about?
I'll say this. We'll bring Matt in because he's got to be able to defend himself here. We'll bring him in and ask him to explain himself. I mean, perhaps, you know, maybe he thought he was going to assemble this team of players and you know, he wanted the field stretcher and Mario Manningham and you know,
he had to build an offense where the guys compliment
each
other.
We were all going to get together over at the the combine or something and run a little bit of a touch football or something like that. But yeah, I love Matt. He's one of my best friends, and that always pops into my head whenever I think of him. Or whenever I think of fantasy football. My father got me into it in like 1988. I mean, we were early adapters and it was like a really cool thing. I remember when I was a kid, I really wanted to draft this guy, Ron Stark, who was an all-pro. I think it was Ron Stark. He was an all-pro for the Colts. I was 9 years old. I had his football card. It said all-pro on it. So I took him in like the fourth round. It was a 5-team league. Me and my brothers and my dad and I took Ron Stark, and they were like, yeah, he's a punter. There's no spot for him on the team. He's not gonna score any points. But I've been way too into it ever since, and I feel bad about it. But again, it's just like, you know what? I enjoy it. It's something.
All right.
Keep in touch with my college buddies.
I like it too because it brings
–
for people like you and me who need people to be interested in football in order for our jobs to exist,
yes.
It brings in a lot of extra people who are interested in football.
It does.
So
it does pay the bills.
I don't play it, but I deeply appreciate it. And you could say I've come to respect it as well. I certainly deeply appreciate fantasy football and people's interest in it. And I understand it too. The best summer I ever had, I played – it was 2001 before 7th grade for me, and I played fantasy baseball all year. And I didn't know much about baseball, but I learned as I went along because of it. And that was just so much fun. So just be extra work.
Did
but
you did you call
I
it
love,
the,
I loved fantasy as a kid.
Did you call that the best summer you ever had?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think it was. What do you think is my best summer?
I don't know. Didn't you go to the Galapagos or summer camp?
I went on the MMQB training camp tour 1 year, and that was a lot of Howard Johnson Inns and Holiday Inn Expresses. and we were all in one van together.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Well, that's good. That's better than the summer of fantasy baseball.
It was good. I got into a good day-to-day routine that summer. I just remember I'd watch Regis and Kelly in the morning. I don't know why I'm sharing this. And I'd mow lawns in the afternoon. I'd go down and hit the baseball at the park in the evening. I'd watch baseball tonight at night, and I would check my fantasy team in the morning when I got up the next day. That was the summer.
That screaming baseball on baseball tonight. That was when they did the home run list at the end of the night.
Yeah, it was. Do they not do that anymore?
I actually have no idea. If I happen to flip upon, flip the channels and get baseball tonight, I'd watch it, but I just haven't watched it in so long because obviously, you get scores on the internet now.
Right.
But yeah, that was always a highlight. The Juan Gonzalez screaming baseball on baseball tonight. But with that elongated intro, I'm going to make you give some brief fantasy advice here, but I'm going to make up for it by starting with the Boise guy.
Okay, I just went to their pro day today too, so your timing's excellent.
There you go. Although this guy has been gone for, well, no, he was a rookie last year. Jay Ajayi, is that how you say it?
Yep. Ajayi, I believe. Ajayi. I just learned it last year myself because I don't follow Boise State even though I live here. So I learned who he was when he joined Miami last season.
And what, there was a story that came out that
Dan
Campbell thought he was better than Lamar Miller. And obviously Lamar Miller is gone. They might do something in the draft. But he's atop the depth chart right now. Can he play? Is he a possible number one back here?
I don't know if he quite has the explosiveness to be a top, a bell cow or the number one back, a 1,000-yard type back.
Mm-hmm.
He might. When I say I don't know, I'm not sure. I haven't seen a ton of him because he didn't play very much as a rookie. But
yeah,
I remember he was effective running out of shotgun. He can break through the first line of defense. He's a downhill runner, as they say. I'm not at all surprised that Dan Campbell liked Ajayi more than Lamar Miller because Miller is a highly finesse runner. Mm-hmm. And even in scenarios mm-hmm. where he doesn't look like he should be, he is. And Dan Campbell is as old school as they come. And I'm sure he likes two tight ends and two fullbacks on the field. So Ajayi fits Dan Campbell's model more. Now, that's irrelevant because Campbell, I believe, is now with New Orleans. He's certainly not in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But Ajayi is who they have. He'll be their starter in week one. And barring something either unexpected or stupid by him in training camp, if he blows it, he'll be their starter in week one.
All right. And Lamar Miller in Houston?
I think he can get to the edge pretty mm-hmm. well. And I don't have a problem with him being a finesse runner in the right type of offense. And I think that Houston can be the right type of that offense right. for him. Okay. I like both of these running backs.
Okay. Alfred Morris, 2-year deal in Dallas. Again, I'm from a family of fantasy dorks. As a matter of fact, anyone in the Boston area might know my brother as the fantasy freak in the he's on sort of some of the Patriots Radio Network broadcasts. The joke we had last year was the number one pick as of March was going to be whoever the Dallas Cowboys drafted, because whoever was going to replace DeMarco Murray was going to go nuts behind that offensive line. Obviously McFadden is still there, but they brought in Alfred Morris. Can Morris still play? Obviously not a great year in Washington last year.
No, he's not. And I know they felt that he had certain limitations as a runner and he didn't have the quickness or the twitch to fully exploit the zone blocking concepts that their offense is built on.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you that by who they sign and who they trade for and who they draft and who they play. And Matt Jones became more of a factor for them.
Yeah.
And Morris took the back seat. They wanted someone more dynamic there. The rest of the market agreed because Morris did not get a lucrative deal with Dallas. There was not a huge group of teams clamoring to get him. And so I thought Morris, he's another guy that can get to the perimeter, even though he's not very fast.
Yeah.
He has an understanding of how to set up angles on zone blocks outside. And that seems highly specific, but in an outside zone running scheme, that could work for you. That's fine. And you'll notice they used to pitch him the ball rather than hand him the ball. That's what you do when guys aren't very fast. You have to make those kind of accommodations for them. It's not a big deal, but the point I'm getting at is that there's certain limitations with Alfred Morris that become more apparent the more you watch him. And it's not a coincidence, I think, that although he's played every game of his four-year NFL career, his numbers have dropped markedly every season of his career. He had 1,600 yards as a rookie, then 1,275, and then 1,075, and then 751 last year. And his yards per carry have dropped dramatically in each of those 4 years as well.
And last guy I'm going to make you dispense fantasy football advice about, the guy who nudged Alfred Morris out of Washington, Matt Jones. And I'll say two things about Matt Jones. First, when I watched Washington's games last year, Alfred Morris would look small. Like, when he'd be back there, it would be like, is that Alfred Morris or is that Chris Thompson back there? I can't quite tell. Because Matt Jones is huge. But Matt Jones bothered me so much because I felt like, and again, this is a very amateur assessment of him, but I felt like he just wanted to bounce everything to the outside. He was so uncomfortable trying to sort of pick his way between the tackles. No matter what was going on in front of him, he wanted to bounce that thing outside the tackle and you know, pick up the big run. And they just seemed to never really be able to sort of get something consistently churning. What did you see from him last year? And, you know, if he's the number one back there, which presumably he is, what do you see from him going forward?
Yeah, I like him. I understand what you see. And I know there are people around the organization that probably feel the same way. He needs refinement as a runner.
Yeah.
And I think if he gets refinement, and that's an if, that's not guaranteed he'll get it, because he's not refined now. If he gets it, though, the physical skill set is there. I'm surprised they didn't find someone else to accompany him. Maybe they really like Chris Thompson, who they gave more snaps to as a third down back last year. I thought they'd find someone else, but it looks like they're going to roll the dice with Matt Jones, unless they draft someone. I guess we still have the draft to consider.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and maybe they will draft someone else. Here's how we're going to learn everything we need to know about how Washington feels about Matt Jones by whether they take someone or not.
Yep. 1 month from now.
1 month from now. Yeah. Boy, God, it feels like it should be done by now.
I know. It really should. The offseason never ends. That's all we have this week, Andy. This was a lot of fun.
Okay. We should. Fun. Yeah, I had a good time.
We should do it again. Thanks to Alex Abnos, who just stayed in the podcast room with us for this entire podcast. He must have had something better.
I didn't
better
know that. So he was listening in this whole time. I'm glad I didn't know that. Nothing against Alex, but you know, if I know the third person's listening, which I guess I'm assuming we have no listeners if I don't think that way. It's a different conversation. So anyway, that was good. It was good of you to keep that private.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah. No, Andy, I came in here and I was like a small child. I had no idea what I was going to call you from the landline. There's no dial tone. I couldn't figure out why that was. So I started trying to call 911 and it just wasn't it wasn't working out. So Alex needed to get me set up and was nice enough to stick around to. Well, one, I'm sure it'll be easier to clean this up, but, you know, make sure I didn't set the room on fire.
Good. Well, I enjoyed it. I'm glad you're aboard. We wish Mays the best, and then you and I will talk next week for the MNQB podcast, I assume.
Absolutely. We'll see you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.